Well, as I mentioned, Ernie and Rob are in Mineola having a seminar, and we're excited about having the opportunity to present the names of God, like they experience the rejuvenation in their own life as they do that. And that's always an interesting thing to realize what happens to us when we talk about things. I mean, they always say if you want to learn something, teach somebody else. And I think that's why we think about God, and really sharing our love and our experience with God is really a reinforcement of ourselves. Today, a lesson title, and that's about as much as we're going to talk about it, is Behind the Mask. Isn't that an interesting title? Behind the Mask. What do you think of when you think of Behind the Mask?
I saw Kevin preaching a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was wearing a mask for that. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how when we think about wearing a mask, it frees up some people. Some people, it's kind of a freedom. Now I can do whatever because I know they won't know me, you know. It's an interesting thing. And part of the lesson is about words and the power of our words and how they affect people. But I was thinking about Jesus and how who did he work the hardest with? Who did he work the hardest with?
The worst.
The worst. And who were they?
Plain old good sinners.
But you know what? He didn't work that hard with them, in my opinion.
The Pharisees.
Why do you think he worked the hardest with the Pharisees? When they respond, you don't have to work hard. That's true. It's hard work when you have somebody that's coming there, usually teenagers or a spouse, to come to counseling when they don't want to be there. It's a lot of work because they don't see a need. They change counselors because they're not saying what that you want. Go ahead.
I mean, really and truly, he rebuked them constantly. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want any part of him. Mm-hmm. He didn't turn them away, but he did spend most of his time with the poor and the everyday man. Mm-hmm. And they just turned away from him.
Mm-hmm. The poor and everyday man was the ones that came to him, so that's why when you see he worked with them,
right.
He was interacting with them.
Right.
But the ones that wouldn't come, he was in the synagogue. I don't know what he said.
Yeah.
We read about all the sinners and the poor that in the story because that's who was in the with him. He was interacting with the others.
I think we see how God deals with different people in different ways. Mm-hmm. Think of the Pharisees and the sinner, the other people, because, you know, he dealt with them in different ways, but he was working for both of them and as equally as hard. Mm-hmm. He was much more firmer and direct with the Pharisees because they did not see their need mm-hmm. or anything. They felt like, okay, I'm fine right the way I am. And the thing that he tried to do with them was to show them, okay, you're not. But everyone else would come to him and say, I'm not worthy. You shouldn't be eating at my house because I'm, you know.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Somebody else had their hand up here. Oh.
I was thinking the way that he was working with them also was that while he's working with the poor, they're seeing these things. Mm-hmm. And constantly Jesus was trying to wrap it back around a different way. Sometimes they're just slow learners.
Slow learners, like us all. You know, it's really interesting that the Pharisees get a bad rap. But really, I think it'd be good to understand a little about the Pharisees. What do we know about them? We know they're people that believe they were doing the right. But what other things do you know about the Pharisees?
They memorized the word. They got far out of the word.
They were very Bible-oriented as far as having the written word memorized. Okay? That's one thing we know about them. What other things that we've heard about? Do you know about them? They're what?
Extreme legalist.
Okay. Self-righteous. Okay.
Same thing.
Yes. But the Pharisees.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Seventh-day Adventists.
That's how it's spelled.
But you know what? It's really important to realize that the Pharisees were a response to the belief that they were getting ready for the Messiah. They had the belief they were getting ready for the Messiah. And if they could get everyone for a 24-hour period to do the right thing, the Messiah would come. Now, in this class, we kind of think, oh, that's ridiculous. But do you recognize how much that's been part of our heritage growing up in the through the Seventh-day Adventist school system till 10th grade? It seemed to be all about my hair length. It seemed to be all about certain behaviors. You know, it just seemed to be like this was the whole thing about how we're going to be separate. The Pharisees believed the same thing. They've got to be separate from the world. And they were trying to get everyone ready for the Messiah. And I think that's an important thing to realize. Because really the Pharisees have got a bad rap, when the reality is they're not much different than many of us. Have some similar history as far as an organization. They're trying to find ways to understand. And there's an interesting thing Jesus said in Matthew 5:20, "For I say to you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven." What do you make that to mean?
Need a lot of help.
What do you imagine the people thought, the disciples thought when they heard that?
It's hopeless.
And I think that's an interesting dynamic to realize, is when Jesus was saying those words, he was really trying to help them to really understand. There's in this book, Sin and Salvation by George Knight, he has a whole chapter about the Pharisees. And I was really been fascinated to read that, to look at some of the understandings about the Pharisees. There were seven classes of Pharisees. Five of them, not so good. There were the shoulder Pharisees, wears his good deeds and actions ostentatiously upon his shoulders. Look at me. Look at how good I am. Look at this. There was the wait a little Pharisee, whoever says, "Wait a little until I have the good act awaiting me." Wait a little. This good act's coming to me. You got to remember the belief at that time is if everything was going well for you, is you're being blessed by God. The bruised Pharisees, who in order to avoid looking at a woman, runs against the wall so the bruise himself and bleed. I'm going to avoid temptation. I got to keep just go against the wall. I'm going to avoid all of this. See no evil. I can see no evil, then I'm not evil. I mean, that's kind of the way it was when growing up in the church system. We got to keep everything away from all these things. The pedestal Pharisee, who walks with head down like the pedestal in the mortar. Pedestal, if you've never seen it, there's a round pot with a hole in it, and the
pestle.
Okay, I'm not saying it right. And there's has a handle and like a ball on the end, and you pound the mortar. Yeah, you're right. Well, this is what they used for mortar back then. So they would, you'd sit there and you keep your head down, just pounding. Always making sure you keeping your head real focused where you are. Let's see. Then there's the ever-reckoning Pharisee who says, "Let me know what good I may do to counteract my neglect." Let me know what good I may do to counteract my neglect. And then the last two, which is the two we probably would rather be, is God-fearing Pharisees after the manner of Job. You think of Job and his life. And then the last one, the God-loving Pharisee after the manner of Abraham. So, Knight talks about the seven classes, and this from the Talmud, what? So, you think about the Pharisees, and then you think about what Jesus' statement is. The Jewish teaching, while recognizing the reality of a need for grace, forgiveness, and repentance, put obedience to the law at the center of humanity's relationship to God. So they recognize it, they acknowledge it, but then they put obedience to the law at the center of the humanity's relationship to God. So it's like, I've got to figure out a way to make sure I'm doing exactly the right thing. Now, all of you that have children, don't you want your children to do the right thing?
Doesn't matter how old they are.
Doesn't matter. You're exactly right. That's the truth. It doesn't matter. You want them to do the right thing.
But somehow we always think we know the right thing.
Well, don't you know? At 86, she's discovered she doesn't know the right thing. So, what happened, do you think? Tell me what happened that the Pharisees put themselves in a position to be so focused on the function of doing the right thing.
It's just human nature.
Human nature, okay. Tell me more.
Just a kind of our natural proclivity to want to be controlled. And tell me what I have to do. I'm strong enough. I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter for Pharisees or not. I mean, that's the it's kind of a human nature. We see it in Christianity today.
Mm-hmm.
How many Christians do we know who are trying to do the same thing after they work their way to heaven?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's you pay for your sins. I mean, I grew up Catholic, and that was the whole apparatus.
Was it really?
You pay for your sins.
Uh-huh.
And then you pay for your own sins, and you say penance, and then that's forgiven. For you and yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's human nature.
It's all about what we do, isn't it? That's an interesting thing. Go ahead.
I think the opposite is also true with other people. It doesn't matter what we do because we have righteousness in Jesus Christ. But I think that when we have the righteousness of Jesus Christ, then things change automatically.
Mm-hmm.
We don't change to get that. We get that, and then we change automatically.
And I think this is the dilemma. We're still in that same dilemma that the Pharisees and the Jewish people were in. Your point. Is it all about what I do? Is it all about I'm doing this because I've been changed? Go ahead, you were going to say something.
That's why we have so many stories about the Pharisees in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Because God knew the Pharisees would be with us always. But they'd be throughout time, there will be Pharisees in the church.
Absolutely. I think that's true. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's the issue that Jesus is trying to deal with, is the fact, and we get back to the Mass. So the Pharisees had this mask, and they did not. They said, okay, I'm now good enough. I don't need anything beyond that. And it's when we realize our need that God is able to give us that which we actually need, that we don't see that we need in the first place.
That we don't see we need?
I mean, the majority of times when someone comes to God, or God comes to somebody, the reaction is not, okay, all right, what do you want me to do, God? It's, I am, a man of unclean lips, I'm a this, I'm a that, and then God is able to do something that then they are able to do what God is then going to ask them to do. And so I think the problem with wearing a mask is that then we think that we don't need God. And that's the whole Pharisees issue.
Pharisees multiplied rules to protect God's law. They were really believing they were protecting God's law. After all, so the logic of the slippery slope runs, if a person commits the slightest indiscretion on Sabbath, it could leave the Sabbath breaking. So they developed 1,521 laws to fence the Sabbath in and protect it. Now,
Is that enough?
I don't know. I think we need more, don't we? It felt that many when I was a teenager in Adventist schools. It felt that way. But you can see, they believed they were protecting God's law. And that in itself is craziness. We're going to protect God's law? God needs us to protect His law?
Wasn't Paul a Pharisee?
Yes, he was.
And he called himself a chief.
Mm-hmm.
And yet look at the drastic measures it took to get through to him. Pastor Tom just spoke about that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it took some pretty drastic measures. And yet he thought he was doing what the law wanted by persecuting the church.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so new and so different.
Mm-hmm. And I think that... Go ahead.
It seems as you look at the Old Testament that the legalism really didn't... There wasn't a lot of legalism initially. They just go off and worship other gods. And that's what upset God so much.
Mm-hmm.
He'd have a country come in and take them off and then let them come back. But it was that they were worshiping the wrong god. Well, it seems like they finally got the idea they weren't supposed to worship another god. Okay?
That's exactly right.
And it was some period of time before Christ comes. I don't know when the last prophet was.
Right. Yeah.
The details of that. But at some point just before Christ came, then they decided that they better do everything just exactly right. They're not going to worship another god, but boy, they're going to worship the god the right way. And so they went just the opposite. They went off the other end, the opposite direction, but they still didn't get it.
That's true. Still
they
didn't get it.
In the Old Testament, as they said, they could just go, have a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you see. I hate to talk negatively about the Catholic Church, but that's kind of what they, I can always take care of it.
All right.
Well, they took care of their own sins with their sacrifices. They didn't get the idea that sacrifice represented the Messiah, who was going to be the ultimate sacrifice. They didn't pull those pieces together well.
It became so rote. It became so much a ritual.
It became ritualistic.
And you think about it. I mean, how many of you are going to go home today? Remember this Sabbath school lesson and take your precious animal and go to the basement because you don't want the people to hear or Peter will get on you and slaughter that animal as a sacrifice. What was the purpose of that?
To understand the importance of sin.
Absolutely.
Because I wouldn't want to have to do it.
You wouldn't want to have to do it.
I don't think I could.
But God, in helping people understand the abhorrence He had for sin and what it meant. But it became like anything. And this is, imagine every day, Norma, if you had to relearn to tie your shoe every day. Would you like that?
I'd come in my bedroom.
You'd come in your bedroom slippers. Imagine having to figure out every morning how to sit down and read 10 easy steps to get your shoes tied. You'd wear boots. We are geared toward getting things in a kind of a status quo. We're getting it, get it to so it's not something we have to keep focusing on all the time. So it works on a functional level. But in the sense of the sacrificing, they lost the understanding and became so rote. Go ahead.
You know, one of the things that has been a little confusing to me is there are quite a few Adventists that think there are certain ceremonial things that still should be done as part of the covenant. And they said, because God said this is a statute forever, and they forget the covenant that was made and that was broken, and that when Jesus died on the cross, all of that stuff ceased. It didn't have meaning, and that's the reason why it has eventually, you know, died out, is because it had no meaning. And it's really strange to me. We have some Catholic neighbors that periodically we go out to eat with, or we'll eat together. They always ask me to have the prayer for the meal.
Wow.
And it's they made the statement, your prayer says something, and it seems to mean something, and ours is a thing that we just repeat from memory. It has no meaning. And yet, they can't get over that thing of that kind of worship.
That's true.
And it's just the strangest thing to me. And this neighbor, I've had several periods of just long discussions with him. And he said, Paul, he says, I have finally decided that you don't work on the Sabbath. And I've watched that. He said, you know, you're always caring for your yard and all this. And he said, you don't do anything on the Sabbath. And so I've decided to quit doing my yard on Sunday. Well, the fact is, he doesn't do his yard at all.
It's funny to think about that, isn't it? How it's just interesting how he's got a reason
it's
to it.
Our neighbors are
oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
How we respond to what happens in the neighborhood. How we care for their needs when they need needs. You know, we have one neighbor, the husband's pretty friendly, but for some reason the kids and the wife just have nothing to do with it. Every time I see him, I wave at him and say hi. You know? So, I mean, everybody watches what goes on.
Oh, absolutely.
The reason God, when they first had the tabernacle, the children of Israel, and the reason why God told them that they had to bring a sacrifice was because he required that they bring the best. And if they brought the best, that meant they were sacrificing. They weren't putting him in the hindward, but they would sacrifice it. And it's, we sort of do the same thing ourselves. If we want to save people a lot of trouble, and they say, well, you're doing such and such and such and such, and you say, oh, man, I don't want to hurt this person's feelings, so I'm going to kind of change the truth a little bit. And that's what we do with ourselves. Try to protect ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. So when we talk about the Pharisees, Knight came up with this statement. He said, a mistaken concept of sin led them into a fatal misunderstanding regarding righteousness. If one defines sins as a series of actions, the next logical step is to see righteousness as a series of behaviors or actions. So if we see sin as an action, I did this on the Sabbath day, I didn't do that. Who were the people that responded to Jesus? The woman who was caught in adultery. Why? Because she felt acceptance. Where are your accusers? Where are those ready to throw the stones? She felt acceptance. She felt, wow, he understands. So it goes back to understanding what is the definition of sin as an act, or is it a relational thing? And when we understand the relational aspect of it, then it really gets back to what does our actions reflect? I always am fascinated when I have parents and, you know, the deal with parents and their teenagers, and I say things like, well, I think you've got to start letting it be about their choices. And, you know, the typical thing is, come back next week, it's not working. What's not working? Well, he's getting worse. Once again, what's the focus? His behavior and controlling his behavior. When we're talking about understanding the relationship and understanding what's going on, then it's all about his choice. It's not about the act. But in her estimation, it's getting worse. And usually I say, you know, if it's getting worse, it means you're probably doing something good, because he's escalating. It's not working. He's looking for better options. He's trying to get it back to where it was. But in her mind, it's not working. Let's look at some of the text related to the Pharisees. Would someone look up Isaiah 29:13? Whoever gets it, just... So we got that? Go ahead. Go ahead and read.
Therefore the Lord said, inasmuch as these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the commandment of men.
Their mouth, their words, they move toward me, but their heart moves farther away. In Mark chapter 7, verse 6. We're going to do, and the Pharisees, this is chapter 5, and the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat their bread with impure hands? Once again, what's the act? They're eating with impure hands. Why do they do this? And he said to them, rightly did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, the people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men. This is quoting what they knew. They knew this. Remember, these people were very educated. Pharisees were very educated on the Bible. Neglecting the commandment of God, you hold to the tradition of men. He was also saying to them, you nicely set aside the commandment of God in order to keep your tradition. For Moses said, honor your father and your mother, and he who speaks evil of father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, if a man says to his father or mother, anything of mine you might have been helped by is Corban, that is to say, given to God, you no longer permit him to do anything for his father or mother, thus invalidating the word of God by your tradition, which you have handed down, and you do so many, and do many things such as that. Here he's trying to reach the Pharisees, quoting the Isaiah. And their question is, why do your disciples do this act? And you think about the history that we've all been, many of us, been a part of in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. We're always trying to understand what's God's mission for the church. What's God's calling? New big thing is now, what do we do with women as far as ordination? And it's fascinating how we look at these things and what's become part of tradition and what's the edict of God. And you see how we get caught in these things. It's an uncomfortable thing for many people to think about that, because it's tradition. That you talked about going home and taking your precious animal and sacrificing, you couldn't do it. Well, they just became, it became so habitual to them, because that was just what they did every week. Just like you as a Catholic would go and do certain things every week just to kind of make sure I'm absolved now. That's the challenge of any structure, is it becomes, the structure is, becomes there to maintain itself, not to do its purpose.
Can you come into church every week?
Absolutely. Absolutely it can be.
Yeah. If I go to church, I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt a little different not to be a part of the church last week, not to have that ritual. You know, even though I enjoyed the differences, it was different. It was just, it just made the day a little different.
Messed up the week.
Messed up the week! Couldn't figure out what day it was. Go ahead.
I think the challenges, and I face this, you know, with small children, you know, you talk about, you know, in different situations with, you know, academy and things, and there were definitely things that were just made up rules. But to share beliefs without making it about do's and don'ts. For example, on Sabbath, there are things that we do and don't do in our family. And to share that with our children, it's very easy to say, well, we don't do that on Sabbath. So what have we done? We basically just share, you know, instead of, well, we don't do this because, you know, today is a restful day. Mm-hmm. And this is not a restful activity, you know, for us, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And but if we just say, well, we don't do that, we've in essence made ourselves like the Pharisees. But the reason that we don't do something is maybe for very good reasons. But when sharing that with someone else, if we only make it a do and don't, then we've just done what, you know, a Pharisee type thing.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Maybe you should make that not a matter of do and don't. But what's the purpose of the Sabbath?
Absolutely.
The purpose of the Sabbath is to draw us into a relationship with Jesus. Mm-hmm. So the issue you're talking about draws you to a relationship with Jesus. It's probably okay.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That's very frightening for a lot of people. Because it requires them to go out, take on the decision-making process. And that's the challenge.
And part of that, back in New Jersey when you guys were all teenagers, I had a friend of mine that would say, I wish there was a list of games they could play on Sabbath that were all right. Then we'd know what to put the regulation to play this game and not that game. I mean, and it kind of struck me as funny. I thought, oh, and then kind of like that.
But you see, what we're really talking about is really what the Jewish people struggled with. They had all kinds of experiences, and they thought, we're having this experience because we didn't do this. And that's the challenge that we all have. All of you who have children, the good father, as Ernie refers him to, which of the child would you want? The prodigal son or the one that stayed home?
That's why God gave the Sabbath, because the Sabbath should be, you do the best on Sabbath.
Yeah.
So if we separate the games out and we say this is good, this is bad, so be it.
Yeah.
You know, and the same with food. If you like good food, come to my house on Saturday.
So what one of yours you would say, okay, I have two children, I want the mine to be the prodigal son. I'm not sure. That's a lot of heartache there.
They were both lost, though.
They both were lost. But the prodigal son came to himself. And that's, I think, the important thing to realize is sometimes we look at acts and we're affected by behavior. Obviously, we're affected by behavior. But God knows the heart.
What made him come in?
His recognition, it wasn't working. Yeah. But he recognized that he had lost something that he had. And that was an experience with his father. And many times the situations occur where we end up having to have the worst things happen to you. Go ahead.
I think he came to himself because the mask was off.
Okay.
I don't know what all the masks about, but when I deal with patients, the mask is off when they're very sick in the hospital.
Absolutely.
And they have need.
Absolutely.
The mask is off, and I can go in there and minister to them like I never could do to somebody who's got the mask and everything's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's that. It was staying in a sinking boat. It's hard to find an atheist. Everyone's Christian in a sinking boat, you know. And that's the biggest thing that Jesus had trouble reaching the Pharisees. They were the ones crucifying him. They were the ones saying, "We got to get rid of him because he is disrupting our system." Saul is. Pastor talked about this morning. It was distressing to his psyche to have these people of the way. And you know what? We've got to check out what things are distressing to us. I was at my CPA's getting my taxes done the other day, and he started saying, "Well, I want to ask you questions." He never did ask me a question, but he said, "Well, I'm a Methodist and I go to the Methodist church, but I'm looking for another church." I said, "Oh, well, tell me about it." "Well, we've become a rainbow church." He said, "I don't want to be part of a rainbow church." I said, "Well," he said, "I can deal with that in my professional life, in my personal life. I want like-minded people around me." Okay. So, what kinds of things disturb our psyche? What time does thing rattle our traditions? What kind of things rattle our things? And we want to start saying, "Oh, we can't deal with this, we can't deal with that." When Jesus simply said, "Come unto me." You know, and that's the challenge that we're all dealing with. It's easy to look at the Pharisees and be pretty critical of them because we can look back and say, "Ah, they were the ones killing in keeping the commandments, they killed the author." But I think that's sometimes an easy thing to do, to realize that that occurs in many times situations with us. Matthew 23, chapter 23, verse 23. "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these things are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they are full of robbery and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisees, first clean the inside of the cup and of the dish, so that the outside of it may become clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside they are full of dead man's bones and uncleanliness. Even so you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. See, I think that message is as apt to us as it is to the Pharisees. How do we get so concerned about how things look outside? How do we get so concerned about something that a certain way, instead of looking at what's the principle? What's the principle? How do we make sure we're not getting caught in our comfort zone where it becomes ritual? It sets our week off to start to go to Sabbath and go to church. Where instead of it sets us up in a place where we continue to recognize the love of God. We continue to recognize our need for God. Because there's going to be just two camps at the end of time. Those that acknowledge and have a relationship with God, those that turned away. It's not going to be people that paid tithe and didn't pay tithe. It's not going to be people that how their sexual preference or not sexual preference. It's not going to be this or it's not going to be that. It's the people that have a relationship with God and people that do not have a relationship with God. Go ahead.
You have to come back and ask yourself the question. God made you earth in 6 days. And he said it was very good. Why did he make
a
seventh day?
Just the same thing. A covenant. It's a relationship.
He wanted a relationship.
Absolutely.
And most people take that and say, well, it's the day you have to worship.
Mm-hmm.
It has to keep the Sabbath
holy. Yeah.
It leaves the idea that God is being having a relationship.
Absolutely. And I think that's the challenge the Pharisees had. They had got it figured out. They had got it figured out. God wants a relationship and this is how we're supposed to do it. But once again, it was all about them and not about a relationship with God. If you keep, I've listened to that Ernie's presentation on Jehovah Makalish, I believe. God is a co-pilot. Well, that's putting us right there in the same relationship with God. God's not my co-pilot. God's the pilot. I'm in connection with Him, and in that connection, it really then helps me to kind of let go of feeling like it's about me. Go ahead.
In the discussion of being careful about letting traditions dictate in your life, I think it's still very important to remember that there are certain principles that are very important that we need to strive to follow. Basic principles that are laid out in the Ten Commandments. Don't steal. Now you can, you know, if it's stealing, then your traditions kind of embellish around each one of those rules. But they are still good principles to consider and to follow in life if you want to stay out of trouble. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't always want what your neighbor wants. And don't go looking after some other god except the god that you know is the right god. I mean, those are core principles that we need to come back to, I think, on a very regular basis. Because they are principles of loving God and loving others and ourselves. They're principles of life to follow.
When you say come back to, what do you mean? How do you come back to them?
Well, by coming back to them. By accepting that there are certain rules. That there are certain rules in life to follow.
But, yeah. And so the angels have those Ten Commandments?
No, they're for us.
They're for us.
Okay. They're for us.
But I guess the...
That when we have the right relationship with God, they're going to happen naturally.
Okay.
And God changes our hearts so that we don't want to steal, we don't want to lie, we don't want to do these things. But He gave those for a good reason. It's pretty black and white. There are certain things you need to consider.
You need to consider, and if you're having trouble with those, then you have to say, what's the matter with the relationship?
Right.
And that, they're all, as Rob has said, they're all future tense. They're all about what's going to look like when you're in a relationship with God. And it's kind of an interesting thing to keep reminding ourselves. If we focus on the act, we become like the Pharisees. If we focus on the relationship, yeah, it's in the experience of the relationship. I mean, if you really have no other gods before you, and God is your God, then those things become the natural outflowing. And you know, I think that's the challenge of anything is how do we adjust and look at and make adjustments to things and keep focus on the relationships.
You know, I think what is being said here is something that when we have accepted Christ and determined in our heart that we're going to follow Him and do His will, that we don't go around thinking and quoting and a sign on our neck that has the Ten Commandments on it. Mm-hmm. They become a very natural thing. Mm-hmm. And so those things are the things that we desire to do. Mm-hmm. And when we stop doing that, that is sin. That is separation mm-hmm. from that love of God. Mm-hmm. And I know I've been reading the Act, well, let's see. What is the book on Jesus that Eleanor?
Desire of Ages.
Desire of Ages, uh-huh. Right. Uh-huh. Okay. I have been reading that, but it's that book that was rewritten, mm-hmm. And it reads so much easier and faster and all. Mm-hmm. But, yes, that's, I know what that is, but
mm-hmm.
I was, mm-hmm. But at any rate, it's been really, I had read the book before when it first came out, mm-hmm. and it's been really a very enlightening thing to reread it mm-hmm. and to slowly read through it and absorb the things that are being said in there. And I just, you know, it makes me feel like, and I know Ellen White talked about how she felt so absolutely sinful. And you think about that and you say, this was such a godly woman and she was a prophet. Mm-hmm. And she feels this way. Look at me. I'm a, you know, I'm not even a good worker in the church. And I'm over here not feeling that need to repent. And after you get to reading some of that, you say to yourself, you know, Father, forgive me. I have fallen so short. I have not done these things that you asked me to do. I have not been that loving and that forgiving. And so you look at those things and you try a little harder and you ask for more help. And that help comes.
And you know what? That's the critical thing is everybody that had an experience of meeting Jesus Christ in that, like Saul, they fall to their knees. And what is the first thing they do is stand up, Jesus. They stand up. And to me, that's a powerful imagery to recognize in that God's desire is a relationship, a connection. And when we have the awareness of who God really is, it is overwhelming. And yet, that's what grace really is. That is grace right there, because it's really Him extending something that we're not warranted of. There's nothing that we can do to warrant it, but it's there for us.
And why did we wait so long in life to accept it?
Well, we got to build our Tower of Babels and our things to figure this out.
I ran across, this is just for interest, we have a group called the Nazarene. Mm-hmm. We're called Seventh-day Adventists. And we have been called gadabouts for years because Adventists will run around, go to different churches mm-hmm. and all this stuff, and because we feel very comfortable in doing that, mm-hmm. because all of our church teaches the same. But I ran into something here in Mark 5:1. I have never heard this name, mm-hmm. but it is Gadarenes.
Gadarenes.
Yeah. I think that's a good name.
For Adventist church gatherings. Well, Shall we all bow our heads in prayer? Dear God, we're so grateful we can come and come back to the recognition it's not the acts that you're interested in, it's in a relationship. We see over and over where you've reached out and you've tried to help each one of us to recognize that your love is there for us. May we respond to that love even more every day. And may we not get caught in our traditions or our comfort zone and get so comfortable there that we forget that it's that ongoing relationship that we can convey to everybody that you desire. Because we are the salt of the earth. Thank you for this Sabbath day and all the people that are here. In your holy name, amen.